Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 14th of November 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. And we're delighted to be joined by David Ellis from Strategic Defence Initiatives. Well, we've been pushing it for months and months, Mike, the subject of EU military unification, and suddenly people are talking about it.
Well, indeed they are. So here's Macron, just a reminder from last week, where he said, we will not protect the Europeans unless we decide to have a true European military. Now, the original translation was army, but in fact, if you look at the original French, he was talking about military. I'm not certain about Ms. Merkel's translation, however, because, of course, she was saying something extremely similar. We should work towards the vision of creating a new European army. Well, it didn't end there, because yesterday Guy Verhofstadt, who's the leader of the Alliance of Liberals and Democrats for Europe, had this to say.
A new Europe, a really true sovereign Europe, able to protect its borders, able to protect its interests, is the next thing what we need to do. To stand up, if necessary, against Putin, if it is necessary. You know what the figures are today, dear friends. You know what the figures are. We, the European countries, are spending 40 to 45% of the budget of the American army, but we are only capable to fulfill 10 to 15% of the operations of the American army. Even I am a lawyer, so I don't know nothing about mathematics. Nevertheless, I was Minister of Budget. But I have to tell you one thing, as you are Minister of Budget, you need to know nothing about mathematics, eh? Only the word no, that's all the only thing what you need to know. Well, I have to tell you, I'm a lawyer, but even I know that we are 3 to 4 times less efficient than the Americans. Moreover, the reality is that we spend 3 times more than the Russian Federation on military. But I'm not sure that if the Russian army comes towards our borders, we are capable to defend ourselves without American help. It was President Macron in a speech in the commemoration of the First World War who said, totally right, 28 different armies, that's a waste of money, and at the same time, it's also a danger for our collective security, and that has to change in Europe. So, that's our project.
So let's bring David Ellis into the program at this point. David, that's their project. We've now had it from the French, from the Germans, and from Guy Verhofstadt himself. He made a couple of comments there. First of all, that the European military only operating to 15 to 20% of the efficiency of the United States, and so on. So really what they've done is they've collapsed national militaries right across Europe in order to give them the excuse to demand a unified military structure. That seems to be what he's saying, is it not?
That is entirely the position, isn't it? This is effectively the positions up moment here from Guy Verhofstadt. And the comments and the mistranslation from Macron relevant to army to military really, really do give the position fully away. You know, this is what we're dealing with. So this is the watershed moment now. We're on the tipping in point. So Guy's really there is talking about effectively this is new issue day for EU Defence Union. So this is a big financial position, because obviously he's alluded to budget and his interest in budget and mathematics and so on. So really what we're talking about here is a huge amount of euros. And there's the closing loop round from military to money. So they're hoping to underwrite the euro with this, with a big defence contracts and printing more euros. So this is effectively the bottom line. So this is an announcement really of they're going to be looking into sort of a stock in effect. This is a welcome to the EU Investor Centre, and the Investor Centre is obviously EU Defence Union. So I've got to say, just in closing on Guy Verhofstadt's comments here, that really, he's saying stand up to Putin. So I would say to that, or I'd say to the people, really, the people of Europe, and that really does include Britain at the moment because we're in this, is how many body bags have you ordered if you're going down that road?
Yeah, well, I mean, you couldn't have said that better. We've got politicians totally ignorant of what's going on. We've got other people who seem to have been told to remain silent. We actually made a call to Conservative Party HQ this morning to ask whether the whips had told Conservative MPs not to talk about military unification. There was a small silence before the young lady said, please send us an email. That's the normal response. But of course, we're seeing this everywhere. Leave means leave, won't grip this issue. The Bruges group won't grip this issue. There's a wall of silence, David. This can't be accidental.
No, it's not accidental. You're completely correct. My sources from within the party, and this is at the coalface level, so these are parliamentary researchers, ministers, researchers. What they've just said to me this morning is this can only be, and this is obviously something that we've discussed at great length as to why there's this wall of silence. It's absolutely blatant. And the comments that come back were, you know, because I said, well, this can only be the whips. The whips are whipping both parties to be silent on this. And the comments come back where we think you're right. So we've got a very interesting dynamic here with Theresa May just in the House of Commons talking about MPs getting accurate information. So, you know, this is the core of the problem. So we've got whip silence on the one hand, as if that wasn't bad enough. And we've got, on the other hand, grossly inaccurate information being fed to the MPs.
And if I can just add a bit into that, David, it's I exchanged tweets with Colonel Kemp earlier this morning. He'd posted a few days ago that, of course, a unified EU military system meant disaster. It meant incompetence. It meant military capability being dragged down to the lowest common denominator. And of course, that's what we've just effectively heard in that talk. 40 to 50% of the US Army budget only delivers 10 to 15% of the output. So this is the utter incompetence within the European Union. And we are now being not dragged into this system. Theresa May has been signing these backdoor deals with the French as if they are bilateral treaties. But of course, France is the EU, and therefore we are directly signing the British military away, the whole military structure, under PESCO, behind doors, behind closed doors, Mike.
Absolutely. Well, look, if the EU military union cat is firmly out of the bag, as they say, it's perhaps a little unsurprising, bearing in mind it's been getting some media coverage over the last few days. It's perhaps not a surprise then that Theresa May seems to have conjured a Brexit deal out of nothing. Well, of course, they said a few days that they were making massive progress a few days ago. And they've now announced it. Let's have a look at what Theresa had to say about that this morning in the run into Prime Minister's questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This morning I had meetings with ministerial colleagues and others. The Cabinet, Mr. Speaker, will meet this afternoon to consider the draft agreement the negotiating teams have reached in Brussels, and the Cabinet will decide on the next steps in the national interest. I'm confident that this takes us significantly closer to delivering on what the British people voted for in the referendum. We will take back control of our borders, our laws and our money, leave the common fisheries policy and the common agricultural policy while protecting jobs, security and the integrity of our United Kingdom. And Mr. Speaker, I will come back to the House to update it on the outcome.
I think the behaviour of those people in that room demonstrates how seriously they're taking this situation, i.e. not at all. It's pathetic. But she said she's going to take back, or this deal will take back control of our borders, our laws and our money. But David, that's a lie, isn't it? Because taking back control of our laws, well, that very much depends on what the future relationship between Britain and the European Union is. And that hasn't even begun to be negotiated yet. And so all the EU laws are already on the UK statute book with a view to keeping the laws in sync as we go forward with a new trade deal or whatever deals that they decide to do as part of the future extremely deep and broad relationship. And of course, taking back control of our money, well, that very much depends on our future military arrangements.
Well, completely. It's hand in glove, surely, isn't it? I mean, this is blatant. You know, she lists these factors, but of course, the prime factor in all of this is the military, but it's not included as well. We know from Admiral Lord Boyce, the defence union and the defence issues are not included in Brexit. It's a separate arrangement. So somebody's really well and thoroughly organised this. So she lists the components there of money, laws, fishing, and then borders. Well, what, you know, borders are frankly irrelevant if you don't have control of your own military. So there's a strap line there for everyone if you want to go off and challenge your MPs with that one. So I've got to come back to this. You know, this is the only deal that's been agreed prior, during and post this Brexit period. So you're quite right, Brian. Yes, it is. It's a multilateral defence deal that unifies all the military into one single point command and control arrangement, a unitary authority. And that will be the EU, not our government. So we may well have some sort of dog and pony show with laws, money and fishing. But the real meat, the real substance and the matters of state, are not being addressed. And this is where it's crucial. So I've got a terrific source this morning that's come back to me. So this is a coalface ministerial parliamentary researcher who said to me that we just had a really bad dog and pony show with a committee this morning with Hilary Benn, that the DEXI papers on the defence treaty are grossly inaccurate. Now, these are the words that this person used, grossly inaccurate. And the advice is awful. There's a lack of detail in the papers appertaining to really the commitment into the bureaucratic structure that exists already to form military or defence union. So that's already there. Now, of course, what do we get in this committee? We get our friend who we've got a wonderful film clip, Nick Whitney, the nuclear advisor, that's saying that from RUSI, EU, funded by, saying, you know, obviously we've got him on record saying that the nuclear deterrent could and should be extended from Britain, France, NATO, EU, as if it's just a fait accompli. So this is the measure. And he's in there giving evidence. And this committee are continually referring to Chatham House paper by Sophie Beach. And this heading is crucial. So please, everybody, go and look it up. Do some R&D yourself. It's called Plugging in the British by Sophie Beach. And this is what the MPs are being given. And it's really interesting. I've just listened to Theresa May saying in the House that MPs will be making a decision based on the accurate details that they're given. Well, of course, we know damn well that they're not getting accurate information. And this is something that's, you know, hats off to David Banks there at Veterans for Britain. He's continually debunking this paperwork and the black and white and posting it on his Twitter feed. So if anybody wanted to see the evidence and the detail in this, go and look at the Veterans for Britain Twitter feed and you'll see it laid out in black and white. And this is really the bottom line, isn't it? That as if we've not got the silence on the one hand, whipped silence, should we say, we've got MPs being fed. I can't do it on air because I know you've got a protocol there at UKC about not swearing. But the person who gave me this information said that the MPs have been given an absolute bucket of nastiness. So you can extrapolate from that what the opinion was from the coalface there within Parliament.
Okay, well let's have a look at what the deal is. And the question is, what is the deal? Well, of course, we're not allowed to know. It's apparently 500 pages long, this document that Theresa May has been sharing with individuals from the cabinet, because over yesterday and today she's been bringing cabinet members into Number 10 one at a time to explain the deal. It's understood that there is going to be a Well, here we go. Let's have a look and see what they say. A UK-wide customs backstop. So that keeps us in the customs union. But what they're saying is that potentially there's an independent arbitration committee which will decide when the customs backstop will end. Right. OK. But unfortunately, there was a leaked briefing note published by a number of mainstream outlets today from this lady here, Sabine Weyand, who's the deputy chief negotiator for the European Commission. And she said, well, we should be in the best negotiation position for the future relationship. This requires the customs union as the basis of the future relationship. Right. OK. So Theresa May said we're going to take back control of our laws, but that, of course, depends on the future arrangement and what sort of status we're going to have within or what the nature of the customs relationship is going to be. So as a result of this, and clearly we're going to remain within some kind of customs arrangement, which is absolutely what many people said they didn't want to be, then there are threats of resignations. Penny Mordaunt is expected to resign later today. So this afternoon, Theresa May is going to hold this cabinet meeting where they will vote on as a cabinet on whether this deal should be allowed to go ahead. And we'll see whether there are any resignations following that. Now, here's what Boris had to say, Boris Johnson had to say about this last night to the BBC.
We're going to stay effectively in large parts of the single market. And that means it's vassal state stuff. We are going to, for the first time in 1,000 years, this place, this parliament, will not have a say over the laws that govern this country.
Well, I find that very interesting, Brian, because he went on to say that he was going to vote against it. He didn't want to be any part of a customs union at all. But if we think back to 2016, just before the referendum, this is the sort of thing he was saying.
So how would you vote tomorrow if there was a referendum?
I'd vote to stay in the single market. I'm in favour of the single market. I want to be part. I want us to be able to trade freely with our European friends and partners.
So maybe he just changed his mind, Brian, but it does seem to me that there's a certain amount of duplicitous and magic roundabout behaviour going on here. And it's clear that we're staying in, and therefore what he's doing and what people like him are doing is just making noise.
He's making noise, but I'm also going to say I'm beginning to suspect that even people at Boris Johnson's level, Mike, are now realising they are not part of the decision-making process. This is theatre going on in Westminster, and immensely powerful people are pulling the strings, the people controlling the billions, trillions of pounds which operate the European Union itself. And I think that now, if you're not in the inner cabinet, then you're not really a player at all. Theresa May casually said earlier on, which we've just reported, that she met with colleagues and others. Who were the others? Were the others bankers? We've no idea of knowing. But I think we're now starting to see the likes of Boris Johnson shut out. So he doesn't really understand what's happening around him.
Well, David, obviously the DUP had something to say about this. Here's Geoffrey Donaldson. Saying that the draft Brexit deal undermines constitutional and economic integrity of the UK, saying that the Unionist Party don't fear a general election. And it's not just us. The DUP does not stand alone in this. We have many friends within the Conservative Party and indeed some in some other parties who believe this deal has the potential to lead to the breakup of the UK. That's not something we can support. So that's the DUP's position. They're not going to vote for this. So it seems to me that even if Theresa May manages to get this through the cabinet, she then has to bring it to Parliament. Does she have any chance at all of getting this passed?
They've got issues with what they're openly dealing with. So they're openly dealing with customs, borders, single market, fishing, and this sort of stuff. But of course, the key to really dealing with this, because obviously that's a dog and pony show, as you've said. So the key to really dealing with this is if the defence issues go in the same hat. And then the whole thing comes, you know, crash. The whole theatre, as you're saying there, it comes crashing down. And then we're going to have to get to the truth. And this is the exposure sort of that we need. Because obviously, you know, Boris Johnson there, really, I mean, it's a sitter, isn't it? It's a vassal state. You know, we won't have, you will have EU deciding this and that and the other. Why isn't he saying something about the EU deciding on our defence and defence policy, budgetary, capital, operational budgets in defence, procurement, officer training? All of this we're all committed to within the existing framework that's been established. But not a titter on that. So the secret to this really is with the DUP. And my sort of opinion on this is that what we really need to do, all of us guys, is focus our attention onto the DUP, the DUP MPs, and keep putting it to them that the border control thing is irrelevant without control of your defence. And I should think well-motivated Northern Irish people will grab this with both hands and seize it and do something with it. And I think that that's probably our best tactic at the moment, is to go that way with this and get them to wake up. Because if they don't, obviously all the other things that they've been distracted with, as if that isn't bad enough, really are far worse, because Parliament is losing competence over our own military. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Well, anybody that wants to know what's likely to happen over the next few days, if you head over to orderorder.com, Guido Fawcett's website. Yeah. He's posted this. I think it was originally leaked to the BBC. It's the Brexit communications grid summary. And although the dates have slipped a little bit, it looks like more or less the sort of progress of this is happening in front of our eyes. There's much more on this document, so do head over to orderorder.com and have a look at that and see what might be coming up over the next couple of days. But I just wanted to end this section with a bit of light relief, which was Donald Trump's reaction to Macron's calls for European military. So he began yesterday with this one. Emmanuel Macron suggests building his own army to protect Europe against the US, China and Russia. But it was Germany in World Wars One and Two. How did that work out for France? They're starting to learn German in Paris before the US came along. Pay for NATO or not. And he went on to say, on trade, France makes excellent wine, but so does the US. The problem is that France makes it very hard for the US to sell its wines into France and charges big tariffs, whereas US makes it easy for the French wines and charges very small tariffs. Not fair, must change. And he ended up by saying the problem is that Emmanuel suffers from a very low approval rating in France, 26%, and an unemployment rate of almost 10%. He was just trying to get onto another subject, by the way. There's no country more nationalist than France. Very proud people, and rightfully so. So, David, I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that, but Donald Trump being very Donald Trumpish as usual there.
The Trump team, yes, absolutely. Doing this openly on Twitter, you know, it's a terrific tool, a terrific medium for doing this, and he's taking full advantage. So, you know, let's follow his lead in that respect of using the tooling. But isn't this the case? You know, we've got Trump now talking about EU Defence Union and this shenanigans with Macron. We've got Mr. Putin over there in Russia openly discussing it on RT yesterday and the day before on their news. RT were running a programme all day long where they were running analysis on EU Defence Union. You know, from a Russian point of view, all right? So objectively, from a Russian point of view, we've got Trump there discussing it and debating it. And what do we have in Britain? Absolute silence, no debate from any of our MPs. They might as well all still be in bed. You know, so this is if it couldn't get any worse, they're talking about it and our lot aren't. You know, I mean, it's absolutely abhorrent.
Right. OK, well, let's just remind everybody that David's presentation at last weekend's emergency briefing on defence is now available for members only on the UK column forums. Do go and have a look at that. Alex Thompson's is already up. These will be made public in the not too distant future, but in the meantime, for members, do go and have a look at those. Just a quick ad for tomorrow evening. Ian Crane will be in the studio from 7:30 with Humanity versus Insanity at 7:30 and Fracking Nightmare at 9 o'clock. So do watch those live if you possibly can. And a quick reminder of AV9.1 Democracy in Chains taking place in the Crown Plaza Hotel in London on the 2nd of December with Dr. Graham Downing, Patrick Henningsen, Brian, Alex Thompson and Ian R. Crane all speaking at that. Details at alternativeview.co.uk. So where does that take us?
Well, who's running the country, I think, is where it takes us, Mike. If democracy's in chains, and by the 2nd of December, that's going to be particularly interesting talk. Who is running the country? Theresa May talks about colleagues and others behind closed doors. We have all of these think tanks like RUSI, for example, who are supposedly advising the government. Chatham House is another one. But let us not forget our old friends, Common Purpose. And we'll remind ourselves of what Common Purpose has been up to. Now, one of the things that UK Column pointed out at the time was that the European Union was funding Common Purpose to supposedly build capacity in Libya. What that really meant is to put in a UK-EU friendly government in Libya after Libya had, of course, been bombed back into the Stone Age. So Common Purpose ran a €2 million EU-supported capacity building programme in Libya, which started in June 2011 during the revolution and ran for 20 months. That's pretty confident, Mike, that there's massive instability in a country. It's very dangerous. But Common Purpose is so confident that they're going to be able to win through, that they start operating in that environment, and they're using all of that EU money to help them do it. So programmes were run in several places for young leaders, including including university students, NGO leaders and volunteers. So how does this come about? Well, let's come back to the European Union. We're not leaving the European Union. Common Purpose is a very good example of why we're not leaving, because this is one of the EU instruments that was being used in order to produce that money, international cooperation and development, the instrument contributing to stability and peace. I haven't seen the EU achieve a lot of peace anywhere, Mike, but they've got plenty of money to help get Common Purpose in. And what has Common Purpose been doing? Well, luckily, on their own website, you can have a look at a report that's been written into Common Purpose. It's an independent evaluation report commissioned by Common Purpose to evaluate the European Union supported initial capacity building program for emerging institutions and civil society in Libya. So those Libyan people, just not capable of running their own country, not capable of organising themselves into a government. So Common Purpose needs to come in, funded by the European Union. And of course, we've reported for years and years that Common Purpose, of course, highly pro-European, and will be doing everything it can to achieve Remain. So they're boasting that they've done extremely well. Encourage people to get on their website and have a look at this report. It says a fully developed proposal for the Labour Ministry for a bespoke leadership development programme for the civil service, which has the potential for significant impact if adopted by the government. Senior managers from the private sector, Benghazi institutions, civil society, learn to cooperate across sectors as well as to lead. So we're to believe that before Common Purpose got in there, people didn't even know how to interact. Women will come on to them, and also younger participants. Here's the detail, close collaboration, top of the screen right, between staff of the EU, FPI and EU delegation and Common Purpose in the early stages of the programme. So are you dealing with a charity here, Mike, or are you dealing with a a political organisation. Well, it's quite clear common purpose is political. Now, I was sort of not reassured that this was an independent evaluation because I couldn't find out who Richard Williams is. And if anybody can help me with that, I would really like to know. We are to believe that Common Purpose went in and spent the 2 million euros to everybody's advantage because a Mr. Richard Williams said so. But this is the key bit. Three of the most ambitious initiatives by participants were women-led, to open 200 kindergartens nationwide, to retrain all teachers of English, and to provide 3,000 ex-fighters with vocational training. Like other projects, however, these required government backing and were delayed by the lengthy process of electing and installing a new administration. So Common Purpose, Mike, straight into the children, straight into taking over the education so that you can control what information they get, what information they believe. And this is all being done on the basis of EU politics. Mm. Well, let's remind ourselves that we had David Cameron, of course, a little while ago, 2010, in fact, promoting Common Purpose in India. This did actually cause some furore with amongst his own MPs, but even the Telegraph picked up on it here. Interesting to note that alongside David Cameron was Lord Paton, who at the time was chairman of the BBC Trust. And of course, the BBC paid vast amounts of money to Common Purpose. But here we are with the British government and the BBC and Common Purpose targeting India. And just like to bring a little bit more on that in a moment. But people may be interested to know that, of course, one of the organisations fully supporting Common Purpose in developing leaders is American Express. And here we are. Charlotte Durden, Vice President, said you leave Common Purpose having built all these relationships with people from all walks of life. The next time a challenging situation comes up at work, you can pick up the phone and bounce ideas off someone you trust who will give you a fresh perspective. David, this is a secretive political network of people who do deals behind closed doors, out of sight of the public. We are to be encouraged that this is run by American Express.
Staggering, isn't it? You know, I mean, as you've rightly said time and time again, we've got serious issues here with taxation and representation and our politicians making the law and policy. And this is our principal issue, is that it's the politicians sitting, well, sorry, it's the MPs sitting in Parliament that should be making the policy and the laws collectively in open debate for the benefit of the people. That's the function. Now, all the while, we keep getting these ancillary or parallel groups to Parliament, and that can be any of them. And you've listed quite a few today, making policy behind closed doors, out of the democratic process, out of democratic mandate. That is where the problems are coming from, because it's not how people want to live. You know, we're not going to straighten this out until the MPs themselves make the policy. Now, this is not a question of them receiving policy from on high, from elsewhere remotely. This is they have to do it themselves. Yeah. And this is our principal issue in this country now, is that those people that we are elected under the basis that they are making proper, right and just policy and law for the people that they purport to represent.
Well, they're absolutely not, of course, David. Let's just see what American Express say that they're doing. So we're going to come back to the report here. This is a report on Common Purpose's website again. What's it got to say? UK American Express Leadership Academy, 5-year evaluation report. Well, the first thing I noticed was the evaluation is by the same mysterious Richard Williams. So we can be sure it's independent, Mike. No worries.
Good.
That it might be biased. It's independent by Richard Williams.
Do we even know if Richard Williams exists?
Well, there is a former Special Forces Richard Williams, but I don't know whether it's the same man or not. I found it interesting that Richard Williams comes up in a political way. But whether it's that same man, I don't know. I've brought the executive summary on screen so that you can freeze it at home, as it were, freeze it on screen and have a look. But I just thought we should read this out. The UK American Express Leadership Academy aims to develop a network of first-class leaders to run third sector organisations in the UK by offering emerging leaders an intensive experiential training course. This evaluation was commissioned to review the first 5 years. So American Express and Common Purpose have appointed themselves to train every charity, non-government organisation which represent the third sector leaders, Mike. And let's also remember that David Cameron, of course, said that in his big society, the third sector was going to be fully integrated with government.
And of course, that's what's happening through the fusion doctrine. And so what we have then is a picture where the civil service has been trained by Common Purpose from the top down. The NGOs, which are now being fused into government under the fusion doctrine, which follows on from David Cameron's big society, they're all getting the treatment. So what does that leave? The private sector? Well, the private sector is driving this via Common Purpose because the private sector is funding it.
The private sector is American Express. So who do you need alongside Common Purpose in order to drive this agenda through? Well, of course, we've already shown that Common Purpose working hand in glove with the BBC. So I picked up here, Mike, on your excellent news on Monday with Patrick Henningsen, because the BBC getting its knickers in a twist over so-called fake news. And you mentioned this gentleman.
Well, no, this is before that. This is this is inside the Foreign Office. This is their new propaganda campaign, which begins tomorrow night on BBC Two. So anybody that wants to watch that, actually, I think it probably comes in between the two programs from Ian Crane, so that might work very well. But basically, the BBC has now made a three-part documentary series about the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. They filmed FCO staff in London and around the world over a year from the summer of 2017 to the summer of 2018. They've now finished their editing project, and it's going to be broadcast starting tomorrow. The first episode is called Keeping Power and Influence.
Right.
So this is a positive puff piece on the Foreign and Commonwealth Office by the BBC, well, we should be impressed by that they're spending our money in a productive way.
It will be interesting to see, Mike, whether the BBC points out that the Foreign and Commonwealth Office has declared it is running the military as far as discussions with the European Union is going. So, sorry, got ahead of myself there, but let's follow it through. Let's bring in the gentleman you were talking about, Jamie Angus, director of BBC World Service Group. And the subject was fake news. So this is his Twitter page. He's promoting real or deep fake. See how many languages BBC presenter, whatever he's called, can really speak. So it's fake news. Trust the BBC. But let's have a look at where the BBC are operating. And surprise, surprise, we come back to India. So here's Jamie tweeting out, don't miss out on the big BBC event at Seminar Hall, Delhi and other cities, Lucknow. How many have we got there? Five other cities. So heavy, heavy targeting of the BBC. The Indians, who I believe have been in that country for a few thousand years, but they can't run the country. They can't recognise things which are false. They need the BBC. So in comes the BBC, alongside Common Purpose, of course. And this is the sort of stuff they're pointing out. So in the tweet bottom left, we're apparently to believe that WhatsApp is now causing major trouble. We've got people dying as a result of WhatsApp. And the Indians need the advice of the BBC in order to know what is fake news. Well, I think this is fake news itself, but it gets worse because here's Angus tweeting out or retweeting, sorry, a tweet by Zoe Kleinman, a little film at This Is Fox, and I made about fake news featuring some very cute bots. So one minute we're on to very serious things, that fake news is bringing down media reporting UK and worldwide, but there's some very sweet little bots in her video. Well, who does the BBC want us to believe on the subject of fake news? We've got Zoe Kleinman's Twitter page here, and apparently she's not very keen on cheese, Mike.
Right.
So most of this Twitter page is about nonsense. But we did pick up this, which is here she's boasting that she's been working in the BBC News green screen studio with This Is Fox. This Is Fox is the individual on the left. It's a very weird room. We can show you what we were up to on Monday. Is this written for children? Well, here she is, just been on BBC World TV with a fabulous whoever. I'm wearing leopard print, denim and big hair. I thought today was a radio shift. So the British public, 17.4 million of them, who were wise enough to know that we needed to leave the European Union pretty quickly, are to believe what this woman has to say with regard to what's true and what's not. And if that's not bad enough, let's bring Chris Fox on screen himself. What is he big on? Well, he likes ramen, which I think is a Japanese dish of some sort. He likes video games and playing pool.
So these guys are all well qualified then for establishing what's real news and what's fake news.
Yeah, this is tremendous stuff, Mike. What's the BBC total?
3.74 billion pounds
brings you people like this. But not to worry, because he's very excited that the series of Doctor Who is so good. He's got an interview with the Spice Girls up there, because one of the Spice Girls has been talking about Brexit. David, I'm going to say to you that the BBC, I think the BBC's brand has now collapsed, which is why we're seeing this attempted attack on alternative media. The BBC simply can't function, because the average thinking individual knows that what is coming out of the BBC is utter dross. And I am allowed to use that word on the UK column.
Agreed, utter dross. And, you know, the independent media now is the media. That's the whole point of this, isn't it? That the, you know, you guys there at the UKC and all the other networks that are out there are actually the media. You know, this thing, the BBC, you know, just... Well, you can watch it, but you can, you know, that's, you can just see what the inversion is. You don't see reality. You just see the inversion.
Yeah. OK, well, just before we close, let's come on to the important subject of 5G. And I'd like to thank the gentleman very much who sent this document through to us. This is a report that's come out of the US Naval Medical Research Institute. It's dated 1971. And this is bringing together some 2000 reports, which is to do with the dangers of radio frequencies. And I could only capture part of the document by bringing in a little video here. So I'll just let part of this scroll through. But what is absolutely fascinating is the amount of information that's come into this organisation, in which they are warning of all sorts of problems as a result of the use of these types of frequencies. And as you'll see in just a couple of seconds, virtually every part of the body affected. 2,000 reports and documents have been used in this assessment. And really what they're saying is that particularly high frequency radio transmission is immensely dangerous. I'm not surprised about this at all, because I would simply say to our audience today that when I was had recently joined the Navy, back in 1972, any warship had warning notices and distances around every single aerial on board the ship, and some of them were known to be extremely dangerous. We're now introducing 5G, but apparently there isn't a problem. So that document we'll try and make available in its entirety, but a huge amount of information and warning of immense physical and mental risks as a result of high frequency 5G type signals. Well, on the subject of signals, we probably should put up this image. This is the unfortunate sight of the Norwegian frigate Helge Ingstad, which was beached, but is now virtually sunk, just the Aegis system aerials above the water. So immense embarrassment for the Norwegian Navy, Mike, and NATO, really. But we are, well, we learnt that a tanker and not the Russians was to blame. Can't understand what happened, because this appeared to be a glancing blow, but the damage to the frigate was immense. So it's no wonder at all that this ship has sunk. And well, luckily it wasn't the Russians, or was it? Because Russia today is reporting that Norway has been saying that the Russians jammed their GPS system while the exercise was going on. So possibly the Norwegian ship didn't see the tanker because the Russians had jammed GPS.
Is that
a good theory?
It's possible. Is this a case then of electronics and lots of flashy lights and exciting looking screens that nobody looks out anymore?
Nobody looked out the window. No, I think it's something there. But it's interesting to see the Russians brought into the general scenario that they've caused a problem. Mm. David, thank you very much for joining us. We'll leave it there. And we'll be back at the same time on Friday.